Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. This is Democracy Now! Dueling rulings. Two federal judges have handed down conflicting decisions on the abortion pill mifepristone. An anti-abortion Trump-appointed judge in Texas halted the FDA's approval of the drug, while a judge in Washington state orders the FDA to maintain the status quo on mifepristone, which was approved by the FDA 23 years ago. We'll speak to the head of Planned Parenthood, Alexis McGill Johnson, as well as Jessica Mason Piclo of Rewire News.
The anti-choice movement is authoritarian by nature, and they are using the federal courts to do what they can't do in state houses.
We'll also talk to the co-founder of the Miscarriage and Abortion Hotline, who works to increase access to abortion pills, as well as the only independent abortion provider in Arizona.
This leaves pregnant people and clinics in limbo, all while abortion access is already difficult or impossible for many in Arizona and across the country.
We'll also look at how the federal judge in Texas based his ruling on the abortion pill in part on the 1873 Comstock Act, which banned the interstate mailing or distribution of, quote, obscene materials. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Two federal judges issued conflicting rulings around medication abortion Friday night, creating even greater turmoil amidst dwindling abortion rights in the United States. In Texas, a Trump-appointed judge placed a nationwide injunction on the FDA's approval of mifepristone, issued over two decades ago, which is due to take effect at the end of this week. The Justice Department is appealing the ruling. Meanwhile, in a separate case, just an hour later Friday night, a Washington state judge ordered the FDA not to make any changes to mifepristone's availability. After headlines, we'll spend the rest of the hour looking at the implications of these rulings. Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas has defended the frequent lavish trips he received from real estate billionaire and GOP megadonor Harlan Crow, saying he was advised at the time not to report them. Thomas also referred to Crow and his wife as being among his family's dearest friends. Meanwhile, more details are emerging about Harlan Crow in a resurfaced 2014 article published by the Dallas Morning News, in which a tour of his Dallas-area mansion revealed he had a collection of Nazi memorabilia, including a signed copy of Mein Kampf, signed by Adolf Hitler, paintings by Hitler, Nazi medallions, swastika embossed linens, and a garden filled with statues of 20th-century dictators. The Justice Department has launched a criminal investigation into an apparent leak of Pentagon documents revealing details about the U.S. role in the Ukraine war and Russian operations in Ukraine and beyond. They include data on U.S. surveillance drones in the region and ammunition needed by Ukrainian forces. The materials also contain information about China and reveal U.S. intelligence gathering on allies, including Ukraine, South Korea, and Israel. The documents date from late February to early March, but have appeared on social media in recent weeks, including last Friday. In Ukraine, an 11-year-old girl and her father were killed Sunday as Russia's military struck a residential building in the Ukrainian city of Zaporizhia. The violence came as a Ukrainian charity said it's reunited dozens of children with their families over the past week after they were deported from occupied parts of Ukraine. Russia's denied abducting the children, but said some youth were evacuated from the front lines for their own safety. This is Natalia Dok, a mother who reunited with her twin daughters Friday, months after they were taken to Russia and occupied Crimea, and told they would be put up for adoption.
конечно, очень тяжело. Да, мы ехали, мы не спали.
It was terribly difficult, but we kept on going. We did not sleep at night. We slept sitting up. We stopped very little. Our goal was to pick the children up. We knew that we had to achieve it despite all obstacles. Yes, we left everything behind, relatives and friends.
Ukraine says more than 19,000 children have been taken to Russian territory since President Vladimir Putin ordered his military to invade Ukraine last year. The United Nations has said the forced deportations violate international humanitarian law and amount to a war crime. China conducted 3 days of live-fire military drills around Taiwan involving dozens of Chinese warplanes and 11 naval vessels, including an aircraft carrier. China launched the war games as Taiwanese President Tsai Ing-wen wrapped up a visit to the U.S., where she met with House Speaker Kevin McCarthy and other lawmakers. On Friday, President Tsai Ing-wen defended her trip, which Beijing called a provocation and views as a threat to its sovereignty over Taiwan.
We showed the international community that in the face of pressure and threats, Taiwan will be even more united and will absolutely not yield to suppression, nor do to obstructions, stop exchanges with the world.
Israel's military has fired artillery shells and launched airstrikes on Syria in response to a half dozen rockets fired at northern Israel and the occupied Golan Heights from Syrian territory over the weekend. Syria's government says it was the 10th attack on Syrian territory by Israel so far this year. This follows Israeli airstrikes on Gaza and southern Lebanon in response to rocket fire. Israel's bombing of Gaza on Friday destroyed the home of Mohamed Abu Nima, a 23-year-old Palestinian taxi driver who said he and his family narrowly survived death.
If I was in the car, I would have died. Money and the car can be redeemed. But what does the citizen have to do in all of this? What do the children, my two-year-old sister, my parents and siblings have to do in all of this? This is a residential area. There's nothing here but a home, crops, a building, agricultural land.
Earlier today, Palestinian health officials said 15-year-old Mohammed Fayez Bilhan was killed in an Israeli military raid in the occupied West Bank near the city of Jericho. In Tel Aviv, an Italian tourist was killed and five others injured Friday when a Palestinian man with Israeli citizenship rammed a car into a crowd of pedestrians. Israeli security forces then shot and killed him. The attack came after Israeli troops were filmed beating and tear-gassing Palestinian worshippers inside the Al-Aqsa Mosque in occupied East Jerusalem last week, prompting condemnation by Palestinians and world leaders. Meanwhile, tens of thousands of Israelis resumed protests over the weekend, demanding the far-right government of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu cancel plans to dramatically weaken Israel's judiciary. In Yemen, Saudi officials are meeting with Houthi leaders for peace talks mediated by Oman in hopes of finding a path to end the brutal war that's driven Yemen to a humanitarian catastrophe. The UN expressed hope the renewed momentum towards ending the conflict, including the recent resumption of ties between Saudi Arabia and Iran, could finally lead to a sustainable peace deal. This is Chief Houthi negotiator Mohammed Abdel Salam speaking from the airport in Sana'a on Saturday as the Omani delegation arrived in the Yemeni capital.
Our just demands are stopping the aggression completely, lifting the blockade completely, paying the salaries of all Yemeni employees from oil and gas revenues for all Yemeni employees, as well as the exit of foreign forces from Yemen, compensations and reconstruction.
Iranian authorities say they're installing surveillance cameras in public spaces in order to identify and bring to justice women who are not wearing the mandatory hijab. This is Iran's chief of police.
With the use of advanced technology and equipment, the person is identified. She will be warned, then that person will be introduced to the judicial system with the documents to deal with the issue.
This comes just over 6 months after the death of Mahsa Amini while in custody of the so-called morality police, which spurred a nationwide revolt. A growing number of Iranian women are choosing to go unveiled outside their homes despite the risks of arrest and violent crackdown on dissent. Iranian police also warned businesses, including shops and restaurants, they could be shut down if they violate the hijab law. Back in the United States and Tennessee, the Nashville Metropolitan Council could reinstate Democratic State Representative Justin Jones as early as today after he was expelled by the Republican-led state legislature last week, alongside fellow State Representative Justin Pearson of Memphis for leading a protest against gun violence on the chamber floor. The Board of Commissioners for Shelby County is scheduled to hold a special meeting Wednesday to consider reappointing Justin Pearson to his position. The reappointments would be temporary, but both lawmakers could run in special election to reclaim their seats. On Sunday, Pearson spoke at an Eastern service in Memphis.
They convinced themselves that this would be the end because we wouldn't see past the veil of their faux democracy and understand it for what it truly is, which is a mobocracy ruled by the rules of white supremacy and patriarchy.
On Friday, Vice President Kamala Harris traveled to Nashville, where she met with the expelled lawmakers and praised their courage in standing up for their constituents. In New Jersey, unions representing 9,000 faculty and academic staff have gone on strike at Rutgers University's three main campuses in New Brunswick, Newark, and Camden. They're demanding increased pay and better job security, especially for poorly paid graduate workers and adjunct faculty. It's the first strike by educators in Rutgers' 257-year history. And here in New York, family and community members are demanding justice for Raul de la Cruz, a 42-year-old man from the Bronx who was critically injured in late March by New York police officers who shot him six times. De la Cruz was experiencing a mental health crisis when his father called 311 for help. The call was routed to a 911 operator who dispatched police who did not speak Spanish. The officers began firing at de la Cruz within seconds of arriving, claiming he had a knife. De la Cruz was taken to the hospital where he remained unconscious for days, is now slowly recovering. His supporters rallied outside the Bronx police precinct Friday. This is De La Cruz's 9-year-old cousin, Juliana Fuentes, confronting police officers.
You're abusers. Why you wanted to kill him? Why you wanted to kill him? He's my cousin. Why you wanted to kill him?
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Today, we spend the hour looking at perhaps the most significant legal rulings on abortion since the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade last year. On Friday, a Trump-appointed anti-abortion federal judge in Texas revoked the Food and Drug Administration approval of the abortion pill mifepristone, which is part of the most common abortion method in the United States. Shortly after the Texas ruling was announced, a federal judge in Washington state ordered the FDA to keep mifepristone on the market and maintain the status quo. The drug was approved by the FDA 23 years ago. Hundreds of studies have proven the drug to be highly safe and effective. The judge in Texas, Matthew Kaczmarek, based his ruling in part on the 1873 Comstock Act, which banned the interstate mailing or distribution of, quote, obscene materials. On Friday night, the Justice Department appealed the Texas ruling. In a statement, Attorney General Merrick Garland said, quote, today's decision overturns the FDA's expert judgment rendered over two decades ago that mifepristone is safe and effective. The department will continue to defend the FDA's decision, unquote. With the dueling rulings in Texas and Washington state, future access to mifepristone may be decided by the conservative-controlled Supreme Court. On Sunday, Health and Human Services Secretary Javier Becerra was interviewed about the Texas ruling by CNN's Dana Bash.
But are you taking it off the table that you will recommend the FDA ignore a ban?
Everything is on the table. The president said that way back when the Dobbs decision came out. Every option is on the table.
After Becerra's comment, an HHS spokesperson issued a clarifying statement tweeting, quote, as dangerous a precedent it sets for a court to disregard FDA's expert judgment regarding a drug's safety and efficacy, it would also set a dangerous precedent for the administration to disregard a binding decision. Well, we begin today's show with Alexis McGill Johnson, president and CEO of the Planned Parenthood Federation of America and the Planned Parenthood Action Fund. Welcome to Democracy Now! First, your reaction to Judge Kaczmarek's decision in Texas.
Good morning, Amy. What can I say? The reaction feels a lot like Dobbs, right? Not a shock or a surprise, but you still feel the gut punch. And I think that's exactly what we felt on Friday evening, on Good Friday evening, for this judge, the singular conservative activist judge, to lay down this decision to block decades of approval of mifepristone that is clearly been safely used for over 23 years in more than 60 countries, more than 5 million patients, and to dare, challenge the FDA, not just on mifepristone, but also the implications that are far-reaching for other medications.
So if you could explain, Alexis, mifepristone might surprise people, part of a two-drug cocktail that is used in most of the abortions in the United States, just how widespread this is, and what exactly does it mean? The judge said it would go into effect in 7 days, so it's not in effect yet. But what this also means for Planned Parenthood.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for that that opportunity to offer some patient reassurance for the next 7 days that, there are people who are waking up today, tomorrow, who will have appointments that they have already made because they were planning to make decisions about their own lives and their bodies, and they will be seeking access to mifepristone and medication abortion over the next 7 days, and those appointments will still be available. Look, the process for medication abortion, the standard uses mifepristone as the first medication and misoprostol as the second medication. It is used in the majority of early terminations, so under about 12 weeks or so, 10 to 12 weeks. And it is common. It's something that people can both do in a self-managed way in the privacy of their own home. What we saw often over the last year and a half, so since SB8 and the Dobbs decision, or people having to travel multiple hours out of state, already taking time off from work, time off to get childcare and so forth, securing access to mifepristone and then having to drive back and, again, being able to manage at their convenience the end of their pregnancies. And so it will be significant if, in fact, this drug comes off the market in the next 7 days or, in the next short period, because the majority of people who are seeking access to abortion are seeking it through this method. And obviously it would have, it would wreak havoc on our healthcare situation.
And what does it mean for Planned Parenthood clinics around the country? I want to ask about two things. One is mifepristone itself, if you have the drug in places. But also, this isn't just about mifepristone. If a judge can rule against the FDA on approval, which hasn't been done before, it could be about insulin, it could be about vaccinations, it could be on almost anything, a judge overruling scientists and what this means for Planned Parenthood.
Well, you're absolutely right. I think that is the alarm. I've been saying not only is this a crisis of public health precisely for those reasons, because it will impact, the patient seeking access to abortion, but it also really threatens our process at the FDA, which is, a very independent body that relies on evidence and rigor to test the implications and the health, the public health for our country. And, medicine relies on that kind of rigor, relies on that, not on the kind of junk science that this judge relied on from the anti-abortion opponents. So it could have implications for cancer drugs, for drugs that, rely on stem cell research. There are so many ways in which this decision could, as it's been called, unprecedented, really implicate the public health crisis. It also is a crisis of democracy. It is one in which which this judge was guaranteed because the organization that brought the lawsuit against the FDA brought it in Amarillo, guaranteeing they would get this conservative activist judge, Judge Kaczmarek, guaranteeing it, the decision would then be appealed to the Fifth Circuit, also conservative, and then to the Supreme Court. So the fact that, you know, we don't know what the implications will be because we, you know, we need to see, watch the process play out with the FDA and HHS and the administration. And at the same time, we, you know, we need to ensure that our, you know, patients are getting the care that they need. So for Planned Parenthood, what that means is each individual affiliate will be making their own decisions for operating reasons. And there are also, as you mentioned earlier, competing orders now with the state of Washington that is suing to protect access to mifepristone in the states that they are, that they represent. So, you know, we are sorting it out in real time along with everyone else, but trying to reassure those folks this week that they will be able to get the care where abortion is available and to get referred out of state where abortion is banned, and then to ensure that we both create access, but also, you know, looking at other protocols like the double MISO protocol, misoprostol protocol, in order to make sure that we can get patients the care that they are asking for.
Alexis Magol Johnson, I know you have to go, but you mentioned Judge Kaczmarek, and you're before him, Planned Parenthood is before him, in another case, a $1.8 billion lawsuit. Can you explain what that's about before the same judge in Amarillo?
Before the same judge, yes. There was Title 10 case against minors, this mifepristone case in the FDA, and Planned Parenthood. There are a False Claims Act that is totally meritless related to our three Texas affiliates billing Medicaid, for which they were entitled to bill because they were able to do that under an injunction. And the judge, again, is We're in litigation right now where we will go before this judge in the fall. And, you know, if you know, what we are seeing is any indication, you know, his opposition, his ability to actually provide, you know, independent judgment, independent of his own personal convictions, I think is really in question here. I'm very deeply concerned about the implications for the organization, and also really, again, deeply concerned for our democracy. One lone conservative activist judge should not be able to take away access to medical care from, you know, for 50% of the country. And in fact, this judgment, as we know, won't just stay in Texas. This is how it will have implications for California, for New York, for Illinois, for places where they have declared themselves to be oasis states for care. Because what we know, Amy, is that people will not stop seeking access to abortion. We are just making it harder for people to get the medication and the care that they need. And that is just unconscionable.
Alexis Magol Johnson, I want to thank you for being with us, President and CEO of the Planned Parenthood Federation of America and the Planned Parenthood Action Fund. Coming up, we continue to look at the future of the abortion pill mifepristone and the most significant legal rulings on abortion since the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade last year. Stay with us.
You who scribble on walls with your minuscule minds, you who make midnight calls, you who rattle my blinds, the violence you preach is the core of your creed. Well, you don't speak for me. You call yourselves patriots, swastika style. You feed on the fear of the ignorant child. There's no love of nation, nor people, or land in the hatred behind your You don't speak for me. No, you don't speak for me. I've seen where you come from. I've seen where you lead. It's a poisonous fruit that grows from your seed. You stir up the hatred till something explodes. Well, you don't speak for me. You who slaughter free creatures and then call it sport. You proudly display the corpses you've shot. You talk about freedom and rights and control, but you don't speak for me. You who poison the airwaves with Genghis Khan views, you broadcast. mask your bias and call it the news. You say that you speak for the millions out there and deny that you're lighting a dangerous fuse. Well, you don't speak for me. No, you don't speak
you
for me.
You don't speak for me. By Judy Small. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. As we continue our roundtable on these major decisions that came out Friday night, two federal judges handing down conflicting decisions on the abortion pill mifepristone, an anti-abortion Trump-appointed judge in Texas halting the 23-year-old FDA approval of the drug, while a judge in Washington state ordered the FDA to maintain the status quo on the abortion pill. In 17 states where the attorneys general had brought a lawsuit, including the District of Columbia. For more, we're joined by Jessica Mason Piclo, executive director of Rewire News Group, author of The End of Roe v. Wade, Inside the Right's Plan to Destroy Legal Abortion. Jessica, if I can get your response to these decisions, clearly in Washington state, the judge was waiting for the ruling from Texas and then handed down his. And then talk about what's happening in Iowa with the attorney general halting payments for rape victims' contraceptives and abortions. And the reason I'm putting these two together is this is a full frontal assault.
It really is. Good morning. Thank you so much for having me. And I think what we are really seeing are the second, third and fourth dominoes falling as a result, not just of the Dobbs decision, but of the Supreme Court's decision a year prior to that to let Texas's SB 8 take effect on the shadow docket. Those decisions cumulatively have sent a signal to conservative judges across the country that they can behave in any manner they choose when it comes to restricting reproductive autonomy. These decisions out of Texas and the actions taken in Iowa are lawless, and we need to call them lawless. It's good that the Democratic Attorney General filed the lawsuit in Washington as a countermeasure, because what we have now is a full picture of what trying to secure abortion rights and access via the federal courts looks like now. And it is competing jurisdictions shopping for favorable decisions, which is a poor sign, as Alexis McGill Johnson indicated before me, on the health of our democracy. This is truly a constitutional crisis we find ourselves in.
So, if you can talk about what happened in Iowa, this came out last week. The Des Moines Register reported it.
Mm-hmm. Right. So what we have now is an attorney general who is sua sponte, on her own, functionally saying, I am going to review our policy, state policy, to see if we should be reimbursing costs related to rape exams, for example, and other reproductive health services, to see whether or not they're justified anymore. What we are hearing are conservatives coalescing around the idea that reproductive health care is never necessary for women and people who can become pregnant. And that is alarming.
Let me ask you about Clarence Thomas and all the revelations about his undisclosed vacations with his wife, the well-known anti-abortion activist Jenny Thomas, that have been supported by Harlan Crow. So he's defended these frequent lavish trips by the billionaire Republican megadonor Harlan Crow, saying he was advised not to disclose this. Thomas also referred to Crow and his wife as being among his family's dearest friends. Meanwhile, more information is emerging about Harlan Crow, in which a tour of his Dallas-area mansion revealed he has a Nazi memorabilia collection, including a signed copy of Mein Kampf from Hitler, paintings by Hitler, Nazi medallions, swastika-embossed linens, and a garden filled with statues of 20th-century dictators. Now, I'm bringing this up here because when all this was coming out, there was also a painting of a group sitting around together, Harlan Crow, the dear friend of the Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, Thomas, next to Leonard Leo, founder of the Federalist Society. The Federalist Society, so key in the rise of Judge Kaczmarek in Amarillo, Texas. If you can talk about this through line.
Sure, absolutely. And thank you for the opportunity, because what we really have in this Clarence Thomas story and the ancillaries that have spun off is a snapshot in how policy by conservatives is being made these days. And it's not in state houses, truly. It is in these almost secret societies. To have Leonard Leo, one man who has spent over 20 years really influencing the conservative legal movement to the point where they have successfully captured the federal judiciary and can functionally turn it into a policymaking body, is truly astonishing. And I think it's important to highlight that Clarence Thomas story with the story out of the Supreme Court election out of Wisconsin, where conservatives are already suggesting that they are going to try and impeach Wisconsin Supreme Court Judge Janet Protasiewicz.